Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
So Teddy versus Drew continues on. No announcement today as to who's going to be the starting quarterback. Doesn't sound like that announcement may be coming this week. We could go into the third and final preseason game with the battle still going. It begs the question, though, Chad, that I don't know that we know the answer to this or what the right way to go on this is, but it's a big decision to make. It has far-reaching impact, potentially, on a lot of people's jobs, on the course of the franchise. Like, there's a lot at stake with this decision. It's a pretty good roster. If they get this wrong, it could be a situation where it's like, man, they didn't maximize a really expensive defense. They didn't maximize, you know, a couple of first round picks on offense. Like, you know, there's a lot at stake here. It begs the question, well, who should be making the decision? Is it just Vic Fangio, a guy who doesn't watch the offense very much? Is it Pat Shurmur, a guy who knows these quarterbacks better than anybody else? Or should it be George Payton, the one guy charged of the three with looking beyond September 12th and looking at it and saying what's best for the organization long term? Who should be ultimately making this decision?
I think those are the three guys who need to be intimately involved. Vic Fangio, I don't think he watches much of the offense during practice, but he certainly watches offensive tape. He said he's, you know, tries to watch it alone, particularly the quarterback reel, so he can make his own evaluation and have it colored by the coach's comments in the room. I don't think Pat Shurmur should have the ultimate evaluation, so that brings us to either George Payton or Vic Fangio. And to your point, they have slightly different motivations, let's say. George Payton has to think a little bit more long-term. As a GM, you're forced to think that way. As a head coach, your vision has to be short-term. He's thinking about the Giants. How can we win this first game, this one game? How do we get that done? Hopefully those three guys can put their heads together, and hopefully they're all on the same page.
But it's with as tight as it is, right? Like,
it can still be tight, and we all can be on the same page. That is possible.
You can talk to three pretty reasonable people who know football, though, about this, and it's very unlikely you're going to get three guys that all say Teddy or three guys that all say Drew.
I'm not sure if I'm speaking to the wrong people, because I've had conversations with national people, with local people. It almost seems to, at least for me, be almost my conversation is almost 100% one way.
All Teddy.
Pretty much.
Until you came in here today at noon and sat down and we started talking. Got to get a harebrained guy like me to go with Drew.
There's
sensible folks go with Teddy.
There's a few other folks, but yes, it's almost 100%. People see the former players, former players who are now in the broadcast world, national broadcasters. I think they all see the inconsistency or perception of inconsistency, to give you a little bit of a tip of the cap to Drew Lock being more consistent this training camp versus the perception of consistency with Teddy Bridgewater. And that's just simply the safer choice.
I think Vic Fangio of the three should be last to get a vote on this.
While I would say that's definitely not going to be the case, I'm interested to hear why.
Well, because, I'm with you. It's funny to go down to practice and watch how little he watches the offense. It's comical. Do I think he goes in and watches it all on film? Yeah, I think he does. I think he's seen every practice, every play, every rep. I do believe that. But Pat Shurmur's in every meeting with these guys. It's Pat Shurmur's offense. He knows exactly what he wants to happen on a play. And I think he's going to have a better feel for who the better player is, who the better quarterback is. Who knows more about quarterbacks, Vic Fangio or Pat Shurmur? I'm going to say Pat Shurmur. So I would put, and he's the one who has to go out ultimately and execute it, right? Like, he's the chef. He should get the ingredient he wants to go make that meal. And if he'd rather have Drew Locke or he'd rather have Teddy Bridgewater, I think you'd be better off to give him the guy he wants as opposed to forcing him to play the guy he doesn't choose. I think that's a recipe for disaster. And I think George Payton, and most of the time, I don't think a general manager should meddle. I think it's very rare that they should come in and tell the coach what to do. You hired a coach for a reason. But I think there are some
decisions. Well, in this case, the coach helped hire the general manager, so that's a little bit different situation.
True. So, but in general, right?
Okay,
in general.
Right.
And I think a GM that over-meddles with the day-to-day operations, like, dude, do you just want to be the coach? Then just go be the coach. You should be, you know, putting together a roster and dealing with all that kind of stuff. But I do think some decisions are so big that you have to come in because you're looking at the bigger picture. It's the same argument I used during the NBA season when Michael Porter Jr. was in the doghouse and Mike Malone wouldn't play him as much as he should. And he kept going with, you know, Paul Millsap or Jamichael Green or whatever veteran was, quote unquote, safer, because that's what coaches tend to do. And Michael Porter Jr. is playing like 10, 11 minutes. They said Tim Connelly has to go down there and say, look, I don't care what else you do with your lineup and your rosters and your rotations, but that kid plays 30 minutes every game. Unless he's in foul trouble or gets hurt, he's playing 30 minutes. And why? Because if the Nuggets are ever going to be a true contender, it has to be Jokic, Murray, and MPJ have all blossomed and have turned into stars, and they're all there at the same time. They're not going to win because of Paul Millsap and Jamichael Green. Maybe they'll win Tuesday night against Charlotte, but they're not going to win big because of that. I think this is a similar kind of situation where, yeah, you might have a better chance of beating the Giants with Teddy Bridgewater. But if you're ever going to win, you have to find a long-term answer at quarterback. And Drew Locke, to me, if he's in this battle and it's even Steven, at least has that potential. So if Vic Fangio wants Teddy Bridgewater because he's trying to break his 0 for September streak, I think so. I think someone has to come in and say, yeah, but he hasn't been better. He hasn't won the job, and we're going with the kid. I think it's an instance where he should step in.
Okay, wow. There's lots of implications to that kind of thing. If George Payton comes in and tells Vic Fangio, you've got to go with the kid and screw your desire to win games in September, then Vic Fangio, unfortunately, will be the guy who suffers in that because he will lose the locker room. He will lose the locker room
Okay. If
the long-term possibilities overcome the short-term win now.
I get it, then, if it was a kid who can't play.
So if that's the case, then George Payton would literally need to tell Vic Fangio, I'm going with Drew Locke, and Vic, you probably want to pack your bags. Because this ain't going to be very long here for you.
Which I would be fine with. But here's the thing. It's a tie. I'm saying George Payton needs to come in and break the tie and break it in a sensible long-term thing. If Teddy Bridgewater had clearly outplayed Drew Locke, then yeah, the GM coming in and saying, no, you're playing the kid even though he can't play, would have lost the locker room. It would have been sabotaging Vic Fangio. But it's a wash. It's a coin flip.
Is it? Within the locker
room? By all accounts.
Within football circles.
Well, by all accounts, from people you've talked to, you said it's all Teddy. But when I hear people talk, when I listen to the station, when I talk to guys in the hallway and in between shows and in breaks and stuff like that, like, I feel like it's 50-50.
Where's
like
Big O?
It's called 50-50, training camp 50-50 for a reason.
Where's Big O? He's been pretty down on Drew Locke, pretty high on Teddy.
I think he's Drew.
He's flipped it over.
I think so.
Okay, where's Mark?
I don't want to speak for him. I think Mark was leaning Teddy.
Okay, where's Tyler?
Well, last week he was starting to come around to the sensible way and starting to look for Drew. But when I watch practice with him every day, man, talk about the little league mom keeping score. He loved Teddy.
Well, Richie just said Teddy.
I think he's more for Teddy. He's kind of flip-flopped a little bit. He goes back and forth.
And again, I don't have a dog in the fight.
Stoke is definitely Teddy.
Okay, so there's five former players.
Yeah.
And depending on, it's at least 4-1, possibly 5-0, Teddy. So the locker room is made up of players. There's a couple of guys used to play for the Broncos. Myself never did. But all those other guys at some point were in that same locker room over there.
Yeah.
And we're all seeing it very similarly. So the possibility of losing the locker room is a real one. It's not as 50-50 within the player circles as it is publicly 50-50.
Fine. I understand that, and I understand what you're saying. But you also said earlier that if they choose Drew Lock, you could see it.
I could see
it. So if you were in that locker room and they decided to go with Drew Lock, would you be outraged that, oh, my God, they're sabotaging our year, they're worried about the big picture, and I'm worried about this season? Or would you just look at it and say, oh, okay, well, they were pretty even, so let's go. Let's roll with Drew.
I would really have to hear the explanation to understand it. And there would, and when the coach addressed it in that one meeting where they're going to address that kind of thing before they, we're moving on, man, the explanation has got to be awesome. And it can't have the word future in it.
Okay, but how would the explanation be awesome for Teddy right now? If you were one of the guys that thought, man, Drew, if you're KJ Hamler and you're like, I want somebody who can throw it out there and I go run under it, you know, a couple times every game and see if I can make a big play. And your team, Drew, I don't know if he is or isn't. I'm just using right. him as a hypothetical. What would be the story that you're going to hear, Teddy? Like, okay, you don't want to hear the word future. If that's, I don't want to hear the word safe. I don't want to hear the word, well, we're going Teddy because he's safe. That would be pretty uninspiring as a player too, wouldn't it?
That would be. But we got 80% of the salary cap over here playing defense, who's the leaders on this team. I think that's going to win and sway the locker room far more than KJ Hamler being like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to catch any bombs.
Okay, well, that brings up two more potential candidates for how this decision would be made. I know one you're not going to agree with.
Okay.
But Tyler did an unofficial poll last week. It was 8 out of 9 people, Broncos country, want Drew Lock, not Teddy Bridgewater. So the fans, it's not like it's 50-50 there. The fans want Drew, do not want Teddy. How much of this, if it truly is a tie, they have this leadership council or whatever, right? The players, the veteran guys. You bring in Justin Simmons, Vaughn Miller, Garrett Bowles, I don't know, whoever makes that group up. Would you ever get their opinion on it and take that straw poll and factor that into it?
Heck no.
Well, then you're worried about the locker room, but you're not going to ask
them? No, man.
You're just trying to crystal ball this thing?
No. You, as the head coach, do not go with that kind of decision to your leadership council.
Why?
Now, I've had a conversation with Mike Holmgren about a guy who got in some off-the-field trouble, and Mike was, you know, do we let this guy play or do we not? That's far different than help me decide who the quarterback should be.
No, I'm not saying help me decide. I'm saying you ask him because you're trying to get the temperature of the locker room.
Then you don't do it as a full leadership council. You have a chance to whisper quietly in someone's ear and get their feedback, but you do not put any personnel decision up for the leadership council. No.
Now, it's why they were the fourth and fifth option. I didn't think they'd factor
in. All right. I know we're up on a break. So when we get back, Vic Fangio and John Elway, I think, are similar in some ways, and I'll explain why after the break.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
All right, Chad, I can't wait to hear this one. Heading into the break, you said you're going to compare John Elway and Vic Fangio. You found a similarity between the two. I've been racking my brain here for 5 minutes trying to figure out where you're going here, what the common denominator is between Elway and Fangio. Let's hear it.
Okay. When Vic Fangio has been a coordinator in this league, what does he look at?
Opposing offenses.
And therefore?
Opposing quarterbacks.
So you said Pat Shurmur knows more about quarterbacks than Vic Fangio. I think Vic Fangio knows a lot about quarterbacks. It's through a different lens, but he knows a tremendous amount about quarterbacks.
Okay.
The comparison to John Elway is all the years when John Elway watched tape, he didn't watch quarterbacks. He watched defensive players. So where has his better draft picks and his better free agent picks been?
The defensive side of the ball. No, it's a good point.
And the thought was always, it's Elway. He's going to know quarterbacks.
Right.
Turns out, not so much, but the other side of the ball, he was clearly more. And just simply based on the amount of film and time each of those guys have spent studying the opposite side of the ball, I think their evaluation techniques are actually pretty good.
Okay, I'm going to concede this point to you. I think you're right. I think you're right that the fact that he's a defensive guy doesn't mean he doesn't know anything about quarterbacks. It may actually mean the opposite. But if you go back to the year the Broncos drafted Von Miller, the debate at number two was Von Miller or Marcell Dareus, who I think went three to Buffalo. And I was predicting they would take Von Miller, and I said, well, who do you think John Elway laid awake at night worrying about before they played the Chiefs? Derek Thomas or Dan Salyamua? Like, Salyamua was a good player, but you're worried about Derek Thomas, right?
Right.
So if you're a quarterback, that was why I thought that's the direction he would go. Okay, well, if you're Vic Fangio and you're putting together your defense, do you lie awake at night worried about the quarterback who's safe or that gunslinger who can, you know, make plays off script and flip it backhanded to move the chains and throw it 70 yards downfield? Like, I'm with you that he probably does know him, but if he's going off of, man, who would I hate to face? I don't know that he'd hate to face, you know, Teddy 2 yards.
Sat in a lot of defensive meetings over the years. Every gunslinger, the conversation is the same. At some point, this guy is going to throw us the ball.
Okay.
This game is going to come down to our ability to seize upon these mistakes. Versus when you're playing somebody steady, we got to be mistake-free. This guy is so incredibly consistent. If we make a mistake, he's going to be able to take advantage of it. Versus we know Brett Favre is going to throw us the football. We know this. We just got to catch it. And we catch one, chances are we win. We catch two, we will win. And that was literally the conversation. It wasn't about how amazing Brett Favre was. It was about how he's going to give us the ball.
Okay, but and look, I would never imply that Drew Lock is, you know, Brett Favre in the making. And I 100% believe that that's how the conversations went before you guys played the Packers. But Brett Favre had a pretty decent career.
He did.
Like, it turned out okay.
He's
the extreme example of that.
He is the greatest gunslinger of all time.
Is Jeff George in that conversation?
Well, Jeff George is in that conversation, but Jeff George, the Jeff George thing was there's also no heart and no backbone. Once we get one or two, he's going to keep throwing it to us
Okay. Because
he's not going to be able to concede and start checking down or taking what we give him. We got to get one early, and then we'll get them all game.
And I don't think Drew Lock, I don't think it's fair to put him in that kind of category of a gunslinger. So it's like, well, which guy is he?
He's in the middle.
He's neither, so he's in the middle.
Right.
And so I'm trying to come up with, well, who's the example of that? But maybe it's hard to come up with because if you're a gunslinger and you're not a really, really good gunslinger, if you don't, you know, get toward the far end of it, you don't last in this league very long because coaches want safe. So if you're going to be a gunslinger, you better be John Elway, Brett Favre, the handful of guys that, you know, turn into Hall of Famers playing that way. And so that list is not only is the list of those guys short, but anybody that's even on that half of the spectrum is pretty small because you can't be mediocre and be a gunslinger.
Look at some of those early tapes of Mike Holmgren and Brett Favre together and how
they're high comedy
and how upset Mike Holmgren was at Brett Favre. I mean, he's threatening to pull him out of the game.
Yep.
You can't
yep.
do that. So when Mike got to Seattle, we had a little bit of a similar situation. We had Matt Hasselbeck, not a true gunslinger, but compared to Trent Dilfer, was definitely the gunslinger of those two, and Trent was the far safer guy. And Trent had just won the Super Bowl and was run out of Baltimore because he was too safe. He was too Teddy, yeah. too gloves. He was too checked down.
They had a five-game stretch where they didn't score an offensive touchdown.
Right.
They won the Super Bowl, but Brian Billick knew that wasn't.
But that was also some. I think Tony Banks had a couple of those five
games.
Yeah,
I think he did too.
Before he moved to Trent Dilfer. But defensively, in that Seahawks locker room, we all wanted Trent Dilfer. We all wanted Trent Dilfer. Matt's a great friend of mine, and Trent's a good friend of mine
as
well.
And I would contend you were all wrong. Matt Hasselbeck got the Seahawks to the playoffs seemingly every year.
Was
got
a
him
much
to a Super
better
Bowl.
Quarterback in the future, but that year, Trent Dilfer was the right choice.
Well, maybe to win games that year, but
yes.
Ultimately, what was the right choice for the organization? It was letting Matt Hasselbeck develop and turning into a guy that, you know, I don't have the Seahawks year by year in front of me, but probably led the Seahawks to the playoffs, what, five straight years, got him to a Super Bowl. Like, going with the option that maybe would be a game or two less in the win column that one season was clearly the better big picture option. Trent Dilfer wasn't the future. He wasn't going to be the guy that would win or would lead the team to the playoffs 5 years in
a row. We all knew that, but why not? Why put Matt out there and let him practice and rehearse his worst traits? Become better before we throw you out there.
What ultimately was the decision?
It was Trent. Then Trent got hurt. Then Matt played. Then Matt got hurt. Then Trent played. Then Trent tore his Achilles. And then I was over. And then it was Matt from that point forward.
Okay.
But it was the back and forth was driving us crazy because it was two different styles. And defensively, it's like, oh, this week we're going to try to outscore people. Oh, this week you're going to lean on us. There was no consistency. There was no continuity to it all.
Was it truly a 50-50 competition in camp?
I didn't think so. I thought Trent was better, cleaner.
They split reps?
For the most part, yeah. Okay. And there would be a Trent day and there would be a Matt day and all this similar kind of thing that we're seeing here.
So, and this goes back to, you know, sort of my theory that they never should have gone down this path. Would you guys have been better off that year if after OTAs, minicamp, you just came into camp of Trent's the guy, he's working with the ones, or Matt's the guy, he's working with the ones, but the splitting of the reps caused just things to be in a little bit of disarray?
No, I don't think it led to any disarray. And I think in some ways it probably shielded Trent from being too much exposure, therefore being too safe, and Matt constantly playing past where his skill set was at that time and not really getting an opportunity to be the quarterback of the future. It probably was the best for both of them. They end up being lifelong friends and really helping each other as their career's gone along. So maybe that can be a similar situation here where both guys find ways to turn this competition into a positive for both of them.
And then how did the season turn out?
That year, what happened that year?
I mean, part of it's because guys were getting hurt and going back and forth. Like, it's a little bit unfair to say, well, it was because of the competition or they picked the wrong guy. I mean, when you have to bounce back and forth, the season, you know, has a chance of derailing anyway.
Yeah, we didn't make the playoffs that year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is my concern with all of this. Like, if they had just said it was Teddy from the get-go, I would have had no issue with that. If they had just said it was Drew, we're bringing in Teddy to be the backup, and in the back of their minds they're knowing, look, if Drew falls on his face, we'll go with the veteran. I would have been fine with that. I think the 50-50 competition was a bit of a charade and created drama that they didn't necessarily need. All right, Vic Fangio has said a lot of things that have had me scratching my head while he's been here in Denver. What he said Saturday night after the game may have been atop the list. We'll let you know what it is coming up next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
On Saturday night after the Broncos' 30-3 win over the Seahawks, Vic Fangio was asked, obviously, about quarterback play. And specifically about Teddy Bridgewater, who shined 9 of 11, 105 yards, and a touchdown. Looked really, really good in his chance to get a start in the preseason to play with the ones. Unlike with Drew Locke, he actually had some positive things to say about Teddy Bridgewater. One of them just had my jaw dropping. Some of the praise that Vic Fangio gave for Teddy Bridgewater on Saturday night was just off the charts.
He's got good quarterback awareness and instincts. I think it's shown, you know, in the way he can move within a pocket and buy time that way. You know, there's two types of elusive quarterbacks, the ones that run around, and there's the other ones that manipulate the pocket to buy time. And the best in the last 20 years of that has been Tom Brady. And he's got a little of that in him as far as manipulating the pocket.
Okay. Now, look, I know he's not comparing Teddy Bridgewater as a quarterback to Tom Brady. But even in that skill set, the manipulating the pocket, the guy who's been the best at it per Vic Fangio in the last 20 years, which I think would be hard to argue, you know, he survived in that position despite the fact that he's not particularly mobile and not only survived, but thrives, continues to thrive. To put Teddy Bridgewater in that company when it comes to that attribute, Chad, I feel like that's a little hyperbolic from Coach Fangio.
I can see where you're coming from. I just think he didn't mean it as a direct comparison. He just saw some of that from Teddy during this game. This is a guy who's the best at it, We saw Teddy manipulate the pocket in that fashion, not tuck it and run, stay in the pocket, find the open space, get your footwork right, keep your eyes downfield, and deliver good football like Tom Brady does at a very high level. Teddy did that a little bit on Saturday night. So don't take too much from that.
Well, okay, so there's two parts of it that kind of had me shaking my head. One was that anytime you hear Tom Brady's name in any kind of comparison with Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Lock, or anybody else, you kind of got to go, really? Like, that's the guy we're going to use? But the other part of it was just the contrast of when Drew Lock played really well, and it's halftime, and Rod Mackey asked Vic Fangio, hey, what'd you think of Drew? And he's like, oh, Teddy played pretty good, too. Like, he cannot give Drew Lock a compliment. He just can't. It goes back to his rookie year. I was sitting in this exact seat doing a show when they had their practice down at Empower Field, and we're having guys come on, Nick Ferguson and I, and they're telling us how good Drew looked, and he was just, you know, throwing the ball downfield. And then we carry Fangio's presser afterward live, and it's 7-on-7. It's not real football. Like, I get it, but could you give the kid a little bit of credit? Like, he still went out and performed well in the drill you asked him to do. And it's been that way since then, since day one. He never says anything good about Drew Lock.
I don't have a play-by-play of Vic comments on Drew Lock, but Patrick Surtain played well. And what did Vic say to me? He's going to get beat at some point. That's okay. What he said to me.
Okay.
Basically, he's like, you know, he's been playing against backups. He looks good against backups. So at some point, he's going to get beat. It's going to happen. So I think you're taking a little bit of the, because you're the leader in the Drew Lock fan club, you're taking a little bit personal some of Vic Fangio's gruff footballisms.
Well, okay, and I'm not taking it personal just on this instance, not just because it's a Drew Lock thing. I've had issue with Vic Fangio on this front from the day he got the job when at his opening press conference he's challenging Von Miller to be better. And I get it. Like, it's from a football standpoint, yeah, everybody can be better. That's a good thing to say, and that's a great philosophy. But he also is that guy. He's so overly gruff all the time, never compliments anybody. Whether you were coaching or when you were playing and you had coaches, you got to have a little bit of the, hey, I know when to kick him in the butt, and I know when to pat him on the back. And it just seems like with Vic, there just isn't the pat him on the back. There's just not that. It becomes exacerbating at some point if no matter what you do, you're always getting criticized by the coach. There becomes a point where you're just going to throw up your hands and say, I can't win. I can't make this guy happy. And he, to me, seems like the head coach or the coach of any kind that would just exacerbate his players to the nth degree.
I think when Vic Fangio retires, his former players will come back and love on him. He's had some of the best linebackers in the history of the game have been coached by him. But I understand what you're saying. And my time doing the internship in Seattle with Pete Carroll was so instructive for me as a leader. And, you know, he's just such a positive guy. And it's 10 to 1. It takes 10 positive comments to overcome one negative comment for your employee or for your staffer or for your player that you're coaching. So to be incredibly positive as Pete wants you to be, at first, seems like you're doing too much, but it's the most positive environment I've ever worked in. And that's why those guys have such unlimited belief about what they can do out there. And it seems absurd when Russell Wilson does his whole unlimited thing, but that's an offshoot of Pete's mindset.
But
it's a very fun place to play. It's a very fun place to work.
Unlimited. And they win,
exactly. And they win lots of football games because they got good players who are happy to be there and enjoying it. So I understand where you're coming from the Vic Fangio, the old school coach, you know, always gruff and got something, you know, negative to say kind of thing. But it's also true. For Pat Surtain, yes, it was a good start, but you played against backups. And Pat Surtain is not a backup player. So I can't measure him off of that. And he's going to get in the regular season, and he is going to get beat.
I get that it's true. I guess my question is, what's the point in saying it and constantly putting it out there? Like, if Pat Surtain was all of a sudden full of himself and wasn't working hard because he thinks he's arrived, okay, then maybe you got to check someone, right? Like, that I would get, but that doesn't seem to be the case. He's just Captain Bring Down all the time. And I think it's funny you bring up Pete Carroll. I think Pete Carroll's probably the opposite extreme, right? Like, he's got to be the most positive coach you've been around.
Without a doubt.
But there is a reason why the Seahawks seem to pull more games out of you-know-what every single season. We're like, how did they win that game? Part of it, they got a lot of talent. They got really good coaches. But part of it is they just actually think they're going to be able to do it because Pete's so darn positive.
There is nothing that is beyond them doing it because they have such a positive atmosphere where they work every single day. Things, of course, are going to go our way. That's how it works here, because we just believe it can happen. And our coaches constantly instill that positive belief into us.
I just would so much rather see an approach at least that gets somewhat that way. Like, just have a little bit of positivity.
I loved it.
People
there.
Up.
I've been under Bill Cowher, who's definitely got the chin and the scowl.
Yeah.
I enjoyed working under Belichick, but it certainly was not the funnest of environments to work in. But of all the football places I've been, being a coaching intern with the Seahawks was just off the charts fun. And I want to replicate that kind of experience if I were to ever be a coach. And I try to do that now with my company, is keep people positive, keep it light, keep it fun. Let's create a great atmosphere.
Well, you know me. I'm all about positivity. The show flew by today. It was a ton of fun. I think it was because of that. We kept it positive, kept it light. But I appreciate you coming in, putting up with me, putting up with my harebrained theories and quarterback conspiracy theories and all the like.
Oh, you know, it's always sounds crazy upon first listen, but there's usually a good thought somewhere in there. Sometimes it takes some digging to get to it.
I appreciate it.
But I think we got to it.
I appreciate it. All right, keep it here. The Drive coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.